The Last Days is a memoir of faith, desire and freedom. It takes place in 1982 and in the King's Hall, we are Jehovah's Witnesses. The state of the world shows us the end is close and Satan is like a roaring lion seeking to devour us. What happened next is the subject of The Last Days, a fascinating memoir by Ali Miller. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from the UK, Ali herself. Ali, good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is indeed all mine. Tell us a little bit about your background then and why 40 years ago you and your family were convinced and your community were convinced that the we were living at the end of the end days.
So, yeah, I grew up as a Jehovah's Witness, and 40 years ago, my mum was contacted by the Jehovah's Witnesses. She was quite vulnerable at the time. She was a single mum, and they are quite a sophisticated organisation, so they came around with literature, which she originally thought was just farcical. It had pictures of people patting lions in paradise. But then the more that she was with them, the more she became indoctrinated. And then she was baptized when I was a little child. And from then on, the religion dominated my whole reality.
And whereabouts were you living? Were you living in a city? Were you living in a quiet town in the countryside? Whereabouts were you?
Yeah, we were in the countryside. So we were in the Scottish Borders, which is a very sleepy part of Scotland. So it's very rural and very isolated.
And so you say that your mother was a single parent. Was this something they were offering, Jehovah's Witnesses were offering her, I don't know, a stability, a family, a community that perhaps she was lacking?
Absolutely. I think that's the clever way that Jehovah's Witnesses work, is that they offer people something that they don't necessarily feel that they have in their life. So they fill a gap. And definitely with Mom, I think it offered her some kind of comfort. It offered her stability and also easy answers as well. I think often when people have been through hard times in life, they kind of want things to become simple. And so a belief in God, a belief in the end, a belief in bad things happening because of the devil can really just kind of make things easier for people too.
And how did this sort of how did this take its role in your, if you like, everyday life? I mean, what was it like 40 years ago, or 41, 42 years ago, as we get towards this end of days period? You were just presumably just a little girl going to school, etc., but were you finding that your life was, they were dictated to by the Jehovah's Witnesses?
Oh, absolutely. All of life was dictated to. Get up in the morning, we'd pray before breakfast, we'd do the day's text with breakfast, which was a scripture and an extract to tell us kind of how to behave during the day. We had 5 meetings a week, so I was out at the meetings a lot. We had ministry. We were encouraged to study at home as well. So the whole of my time was taken up by being a Jehovah's Witness, and also very much was dominated by the fear of the end, which was a belief that they very much pushed, particularly at that time. And I think growing up in the 80s was politically such an unstable time anyway, that everyone sort of lived with a fear, with the nuclear fear and so many other fears, that it really was compounded. So I became a really anxious child.
Yeah, that's an interesting one because, and I know this might sound a bit facile, but, you know, 40 years ago, we have this tendency as people to look back, and I was a teenager in the 80s, so looking back and people go, oh, well, it was all Duran Duran and, you know, New Romantics and the whole thing. And this, you know, Stranger Things has met people looking back in the 80s fondly. But if you remember correctly, we had Green and Common, we had CNN, we had Mutually Assured Destruction. It was an extremely, we couldn't see the end of, we didn't know the Soviet Union was going to end. It was an extremely frightening time.
It really was, and we had all those kind of public service announcements as well on TV, and it definitely was a time where we were exposed to a lot of propaganda that was very fear-mongering. And I wonder if kind of culture emerged, you know, pop culture emerged as a sort of kick against that to try and be a bit more lighthearted. But it was a dark time. Mm. And I think looking back with nostalgia is always a little bit of a dangerous thing.
Indeed. So what were sort of other children? Because presumably you were going to school at this point as well, were you? Yeah. Were you doing everyday school stuff?
Yeah, I went to school. A lot of witnesses do educate their children at home, but I was fortunate in that I still managed to go to school.
And so presumably you'd come into contact with children who didn't believe that the end of the world was nigh.
Yes, and came into contact with children who just, you know, lived normally. But I was encouraged. I was supposed to preach to them and tell them that the end was coming and encourage them to change their ways. I always found that really uncomfortable. I wanted just to be normal. So the book talks a lot about that kind of split that occurred as well between how I was supposed to behave at home and how I wanted to behave at school. So I never really was able to fully inhabit myself either at home or at school.
And as you grew up, as you got older, I mean, it wasn't a case of if you were like allowed to evolve or develop. I'd say naturally rather than normally, but you found that the Jehovah's Witnesses were also getting involved in pretty much every aspect of your life. And it wasn't a case of you going to them and saying, listen, I would need some counselling, I need some guidance about this. They were pretty much imposing themselves upon you?
Oh, yeah, completely. It's a very imposing religion. There's a set of rules, but there's also a kind of subset of what they call principles. So although the principles aren't necessarily written down, it's such a tightly controlled kind of peer organisation as well that you're encouraged to comply. So there's rules about what you listen to, what kind of books you read, how you dress. All of these things are never explicitly written down in the literature, say, but it's encouraged by everybody else who's around you. And if you don't conform, the penalty for that is that you will be shunned as well, which is a terrible thing to grow up knowing that that could happen to you.
And so how did you, when did you, because most teenagers, and I did it myself, most teenagers will rebel against their parents, or at least, you know, want to experience different things. Will, you know, every generation, you know, has an argument, has a pop, thinks it can do better than the previous generation. Presumably that, you know, that was absolutely not allowed in your circumstances.
It wasn't allowed, but I did. And again, that created a lot of guilt in me. Like you say, I wanted to develop naturally. So I was experimenting with boys. I was listening to music that I wanted to, but that made me feel really ashamed. So I had to kind of keep that secret. The same with reading books. I drank at the weekends. I smoked a bit. Just kind of normal teenage behavior. And yet it made me feel really, really bad about myself. And it made me terrified as well, because obviously thinking that the end was coming, I thought, well, I'm a sinner. And then my mum will find out and she would be so disappointed, because I thought the way she would find out would be that I would die when Armageddon came.
I mean, presumably that must have put already stressful situation. But if you are leading a double life, so you are, if you like, because you are doing the things that all, you know, teenagers do, you know, but drinking, smoking, experimenting, whatever, and then you're trying to, you know, when other witnesses are around, you're trying to have the pretense of, you know, of leading via the principles, then that puts stress on you, even more stress upon you.
Yeah, it was a really stressful situation. I developed an obsession with being clean, because I think I just felt so dirty inside because I wasn't doing what I thought was right. So I became anorexic. I was really badly anorexic and was really obsessed with like foods that were clean, good foods, all this kind of sort of almost devout, holy behavior as a kickback against how I'd behaved in my earlier teens.
And so, did they say there was actually going to be a day that was going to, that you could mark it in your diary, in your calendar, to say, okay, on this day, it's going to be the end of times, you know, and Armageddon will come and, you know, we will ascend. I mean, I'm not exactly sure how it works in terms of Jehovah's, pardon my ignorance. Was there a sort of run up? So the night before, I mean, I suppose, I know this is going to sound even worse, but, you know, the night before, the sort of Christmas Eve sort of feeling, well, tomorrow is going to be the end of the world, so let's hope that I've done everything correct.
No, there wasn't. And in many ways, the not having a day or a set time made it even worse, because you were constantly on high alert. So they interpret the signs in the Bible that are listed as being the signs of the end as meaning that we're living in end times. So every time there was an earthquake or a financial crash or war, the end times rhetoric would get ramped up as these being signs. But they were very clever, really, I think is the word, in that they never actually stated an explicit date so that they could be caught out. They, in 1975, did say that the end was coming then, and that was earmarked as a year. But I think that they learned from that mistake because a lot of followers left when it didn't happen. So they never actually state a time, but they're always saying we're in the last days of the last days, which is why the book's called The Last Days.
People get, I mean, people have a faith and people join an organized religion. And, you know, a lot of organized religions talk about, you know, talk about love and brotherhood and fellowship and you know, the respect for your fellow man. And this seems almost like they were terrifying you into obedience.
They talk about love. They say that they're the true religion because they show love amongst themselves, which is similar rhetoric to every religion. But inside, it's very cliquey, it's very judgmental. There are people who are living what they believe to be a good life, but there is a lot of coercive control. There's a lot of very subtle tactics that are being used. I think a lot of followers wouldn't even think that they were terrified. I think they would think that they were very fortunate. They think they've been chosen, that they're kind of being elected by God to survive the end. But certainly there's a lot of fear. I know speaking to a lot of witnesses who've left, they've had similar experiences growing up, that they had very anxious childhood.
And you married and you had a child within the witnesses as well, presumably that was, just tell me a little bit about, I mean, obviously witnesses are encouraged to marry within the faith, I should imagine.
Oh, yes, there's penalties if you don't marry within the Lord,
right,
as they call it. So, yeah, I married within the faith and had a child. I was married at 21, which is obviously very young, and then had my first child when I was 25.
And so when did the sort of the seeds of doubt germinate, grow then with you, that this wasn't the way that you wanted to live your life? And when you do have that, and you decide that, how difficult is it to leave a religion that is so controlling, stroke restrictive?
So I really began to doubt when my first daughter was born. I was given a book called The Book of Bible Stories, and it's a book that's supposed to be designed for children, but it's got some really graphic illustrations in it. And those illustrations had caused me to have a lot of nightmares when I was little. And I was given it for my daughter, and I looked at this book and thought, oh my goodness, I can't read it to her. I can't carry this on. But I thought there was something wrong with me rather than that there was something wrong with being encouraged to give children books like that. So I tried to bury the doubts that I had. I had a lot of doubts as well when 7/7 happened, and there was a lot of talk about people being radicalized. And that made me wonder if I'd been radicalized as well to a certain extent, and if I was expected to do that to my daughter. But the doubts, it was very hard to let them take hold. I really tried to push them away because you're told that any doubts have come from Satan as well. But as they began to take hold and I began to sort of logically unpick what was happening within the religion, I realized that the cost of leaving was so high that I didn't know if I could leave. Members are very isolated from the world around them. I didn't know anybody outside. I'd been very devout. I'd done everything I was told to do, so I didn't have a support network either. And I knew that ultimately I would lose everybody I'd known since childhood and that I would lose my family as well.
And presumably, is this the sort of thing you could discuss these with your husband then at this point, or was that completely, there was no possibility of that?
No possibility. You weren't allowed to discuss doubts with other members. And if you did try, the conversation would immediately get closed down.
So how did you go about then? When did you make, what was it that finally sort of convinced you or cemented the fact that you had to go? Was it, you know, these graphic images in the child's book, or was it something that happened? Or did you just suddenly think this is not the way that I want my child to grow up, and I want to grow up, or I continue living?
Yeah, it was a combination. I think it's always a sort of accumulation of a lot of things. There was no one single moment. There was no sort of grand finale. There was this slow build of doubts, of me beginning to kind of accumulate a bit more information, of starting to think critically, which I'd never been able to do. And then I was disciplined by the elders. And again, that showed me that there was no love within the organization. I started to be ostracized by members of the community, even before I'd left. And that, again, made me really think this just isn't the right organization. I didn't know if I believed their teachings. I didn't know if I thought the end was coming. But I definitely thought this isn't God's chosen religion.
When you said you were disciplined by the elders, just two things. One, what was the discipline? And two, I mean, who are the elders? Because that sounds like something out of a cult, out of a brainwashing situation.
Yes, well, you said it. So the congregation is very hierarchical, the whole organization is. But the heads of the congregation who kind of lead the congregation and lead in worship are called the elders. There's usually maybe about seven of them for each congregation. And they are also in charge of like keeping the flock in line, which includes having what are called judicial committees. So if a member of the congregation sins, three elders will sit down with them and interrogate them about what happened. And then they say they're channeling Jehovah's judgment. They will decide if they're allowed to remain a member of the congregation or not. And so that kind of power rests in their hands, and that's what happened to me.
And so, I mean, presumably being ostracized is one of the worst things that can happen. When you did leave, presumably that was... You left with your child. I mean, you left with your husband. Did your mother know about this? Or was it just you just sort of moved, as it were?
So I left with my daughter, and then I stopped going to meetings, stopped going on the ministry. I wouldn't answer their phone calls; just kind of cut myself off from them. But I kept it a secret from my mum for quite a while because I was really worried that she would cut me off. And I obviously was in quite a vulnerable situation myself, ironically, and didn't want to not have my mother's support or not have my mum around when I was raising a 2-year-old. I didn't leave with my husband. We broke up before I left.
And so did you stay in the borders then, or did you move to, another part, another area?
By this time, this all happened when I was living in Edinburgh. So the book starts in the borders.
Yeah.
And then it moves into me moving and growing up and being in a different congregation. And the differences as well between rural witnesses and witnesses in the city, which is quite a marked difference too.
And so, you've left now. Why the book? Why did you feel the need to put down your experiences in this book, which is being described as a coming-of-age story like no other?
Yes. I never wanted to write the book. I really didn't. To begin with, I planned quite a sort of journalistic, hard-hitting approach of actually looking at how the organization works and the Jehovah's Witnesses leadership. But when I was doing that, I realized that, I wasn't a journalist. I didn't have that kind of experience. I also didn't have that reputation. And I think that sometimes there's something that really resonates with personal stories. So I realized that I could use my story to tell what is actually quite a universal experience. I was talking to people who'd left, and I would realize that we all had very similar things happen to us. So when it came to plotting the book, I used experiences that had happened to me, but that I knew had also happened to other people, so that it could really be a way of showing what happens inside this really secretive organization. It's a religion, I think, that we laugh at. We don't really realize what's happening inside. We think they're a bit funny. They come to your door and you hide from them. But actually, there's something really dark going on. There's so much manipulation and so much control. And I wanted to use the book to talk about that.
Do you hear from your mother at all? Has she cut you off? I mean, do you still keep in contact?
I haven't seen her for 6 years. I hear from her occasionally, but other than that, there isn't any relationship there, which is really difficult to know that a relationship is contingent on an organization and them controlling and dictating it.
What do you hope that people take from this book? Because we are, you know, we do live, quote unquote, in difficult and dangerous times. But then again, we've always lived in difficult and dangerous times. And perhaps religions that peddle this, prepare yourself, be it the end of days, be it the rapture, be whatever it is. Perhaps we should be taking a more quizzical look at them.
I absolutely think we should be. These tactics have been used for so long, and we do live in difficult times. But I think that's a universal experience. That's something that we almost sort of have to grapple with as a human, that, you know, that we are living in these kind of very unstable times. But that doesn't mean that they come from the Bible. It doesn't mean that this is prophecy being fulfilled. And I think that we're so used to seeing organizations that we think are benign without actually thinking what's happening, or without thinking about how language is used to control and manipulate people and to create reality. And I really hope that this does open a conversation about the ways in which so many people are controlled. And we also tend to think that we wouldn't join a cult, you know, because you think that they'll look like a cult, but there are so many other groups that operate, and they just don't look like cults. That's not how it manifests. There's so many ways of getting trapped. And so I really hope that the book kind of makes people be a little bit more critical of organizations.
With the experiences that you've been through, and this is the last question for you, but with the experiences you've been through and everything you went through, has that made it difficult to keep a faith, or has it, if you like, reinforced the faith that you have inside you rather than that it's been imposed upon you?
Yeah, it has made it difficult. For a long time, I was very wary of both religion and belief. I now think that the capacity to believe in something is actually really, really beautiful. It's not a capacity that I find very easy. But I would say that I'm still very evangelical about books, which is quite funny. I obviously have written a book. I'm working on my next one. I definitely would say that I've kind of put everything that I had and threw at the religion, I've kind of thrown into still trying to sell books, basically. So maybe people don't really change.
The book is called The Last Days, A Memoir of Faith, Desire and Freedom. It's by Ali Miller, who we're speaking to today. Ali, if people want to find out more information about you or about the book, where can they go?
They can head to Penguin's website. The book is out on Ebury Press. There's a full list of places that they can pre-order, or they can find me on Twitter.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.